Welcome to the Functional Femme. We're so glad you're here. Whether you're listening on your favorite podcast platform or watching us on YouTube, we appreciate you tuning in. This is the place where we dive deep into all things well-being, covering everything from sexual health and functional medicine to gut health, women's hormones, and how to find balance in it all. Today is extra special because not only is this our very first episode, but we're also thrilled to introduce you to Dr. Sunita Mann. She's an incredible expert in the field, and I'm proud to say I've had the privilege of working hand-in-hand with her. I've also been one of her patients, personally experiencing her guidance on my weight loss journey. Now, as co-host of this podcast, I'll be joining her to bring valuable insights and conversations to help people, men and women alike, across the country improve their health and live their best lives. In today's episode, we'll get to know Dr. Mann better, dive into her journey, and ask her some fun and insightful questions. So sit back, relax, and join us for this exciting first conversation. You won't want to miss it. Good morning, everyone. We're here this morning with Dr. Sunita Mann. How are you?
Doing well on this very rainy day.
I know. We're very excited. How are you? I'm good. So this is our first episode.
First episode right before Thanksgiving. Right. I feel like that's a great time to start.
Yeah.
So thankful for it. So many things in our lives, right?
Yeah. So this is definitely thankful for, well, like I said, you've helped me on my weight loss journey. So very grateful for you and thankful for our relationship and what you've helped me accomplish and go through. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so grateful for you because I think that your process of going through that weight loss journey made you understand, well, you already knew the how hard it is, right? Mm-hmm. But I think also you've been able to help so many of my patients through it all because you've been there yourself, so you know the kinds of questions they're asking, the things they're concerned about, mm-hmm. And even just the little things that sometimes they're afraid to ask their doctor, they can ask you and feel comfortable. So that I've noticed has been very helpful.
Very, yeah, and I appreciate that. I feel like I've been through so much as far as my own weight loss journey, and we'll dive into the weight loss stuff in another episode too, and I'll share my journey and my experiences. But I think when you have real life situations and you've experienced different similar things with other people, especially women, you know, they can relate to you and trust in you a lot more, that they're going through the same thing that you went through, and you kind of hold each other's hands, so to speak, going through it.
Absolutely.
So we have a lot to talk about, but I think the most important thing is for everyone to get to know you and how amazing you are, and, you know, we'll ask you some questions and then anything else you want to talk about.
All right,
so what inspired you to specialize in functional medicine and these specific areas as weight and hormones and everything that you are helping patients with?
So I started in functional medicine in 2015. I had an anaphylactic reaction when I was doing, I'm a neuroradiologist by my medical training, completely unrelated to functional medicine. Almost, it seems like the opposite end of the spectrum, because what I did in radiology was very much looking for evidence of things, you know, looking for normal things, looking for abnormal things on all the imaging studies. And so I need to see it to actually believe that it's there. And in the beginning with functional medicine, when I first discovered, I didn't even know what it was. You know, I went to this integrative health symposium in New York City because I was actually recovering from an anaphylactic reaction that I had while doing a procedure on a patient. And I realized this is my second time having a reaction to contrast, which is what we use, you know, regularly in radiology. It's part of our everyday routine, is to inject people with contrast when it's needed. And the fact that I was so deathly allergic was, you know, really kind of ironic and sad, because I thought, wow, I trained all these years in a field that I don't feel safe doing anymore. And so in 2013, when I had my reaction, it took forever to recover. I mean, I was in the ICU, intubated. It was a really bad, bad, bad reaction. Not some, you know, people think of anaphylaxis as like, okay, you get some hives, maybe a little difficulty breathing. But mine was the extreme, where I was intubated and really, you know, my heart wasn't working right, my lungs weren't working right. Took a long time to recover from that, but, you know, thankfully I was healthy enough to take that hit on my system and still come back from it. But I knew that, you know, at that time, that was going to be the end of my at least the practice of radiology that I was doing, which was a lot of procedures, a lot of contrast-based studies. And so I had a choice at that point to say, Am I going to continue to be a diagnostic radiologist and just read studies, maybe from home or a remote location where I felt safe? Or do I want to just completely pivot and do something different? I took some time to really think about that, because obviously once you make that, make that decision, it changes your path in life. And I was at this like crossroads. I mean, people talk about crossroads and I'm always like, oh, it's so cliche. And, you know,
but that was definitely a crossroad.
It was a major crossroad in my life. Like, to have trained, I mean, to be a neuroradiologist, I had to have 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, a year of internship, 5 years of radiology, 4 years of radiology plus the internship, 5 years, and then 2 more years of fellowship. So 7 years training wow. after college. That was, you know, to get me to that place. So I didn't want to give that, you know, I wasn't ready to give that up so easily. But then, you know, my husband made a good point. He's also a physician, and he made a good point. He said, we need you here. We had young children, mm-hmm. and all I thought was, yep, I have to be here for them, because the most important thing for me is my job as a mother. And so I thought, okay, this is important, but this is more selfish of me to want to do this for myself as opposed to want to be there and make sure that I'm as healthy, as safe as possible. So I took 2 years to try to figure out what I was doing. The first 6 months was just, honestly, I've never been depressed in my life, and I understood at that point what depression did to you and how difficult it was getting out of bed in the morning.
In a dark place.
Yeah. Very dark place. Yeah, and, you know, I remember one day my husband's like, why don't you go shopping? Which is words that will never come out of a man's mouth except when he's really, really worried about you.
Yeah.
And so he was like, why don't you go shopping? I said, I don't really feel like it. I don't need anything. And I think that really scared him. And he said, you know, you love to learn. Why don't you learn something new? So then this, in the mail, I get this Integrative Health Symposium flyer. I was like, what is Integrative Health? I don't even know what it means. So I went to the conference by myself. I knew nobody. I knew nothing about it. And there was a booth from the Institute for Functional Medicine, the IFM. And I went up to them and I was like, what is this? You know, so the woman there started explaining a little bit about functional medicine. I was like, this is really interesting, actually, because what functional medicine is really to look at a person as a whole, as opposed to what we learn in medicine, which is to, you know, focus on one part of their body or their health problems, and to really put together a program to get them back into their optimal health. And so when I saw that, I was like, well, this just makes so much sense to me. Because, you know, the thing about acute care medicine, which is obviously what radiology is and what most of what we practice, is to deal with a problem when it comes along. And that's so important, because we didn't get to modern medicine and the health span and lifespan that we've achieved without that, right? I mean, if someone is in a car accident or they break a leg or they have a heart attack, you need acute care medicine. Mm-hmm. There is no substitute for that. I cannot put my functional medicine training towards acute care medicine and expect someone's going to survive that or do well with it. So no one that's in functional medicine should ever knock acute care medicine, because we need that, and that's how we survive things, right? But what about the people that have these chronic conditions and they are dealing with, you know, for example, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, if they've gone to see their regular doctor or an endocrinologist who has them on thyroid replacement medication, you know, hormones, a thyroid hormone replacement, and they're still not feeling great. Well, what about those people? You know, they're kind of falling through the cracks. They're not getting answers, and they're frustrated. Mm-hmm. And like anything else, even women, you know, we talked about hormones. You mentioned hormones earlier in the introduction. Well, women in perimenopause and menopause are at this time in their lives, they're very vulnerable. They have these mental changes, emotional changes, physical changes. Everything about them is changing, and they don't understand what's happening. Their mom went through it, and maybe their mom suffered in silence, or maybe they spoke to their friends that are going through it. But people don't talk about this openly, what struggles they're going through. And so I saw, as I started my functional medicine journey, which had nothing to do with weight loss or hormones, right? Mm-hmm. And all that came later, because as we evolve and we grow in whatever we're doing, we recognize areas that maybe speak to us a little more. I mean, you know, at my age now, I'm in my mid-50s, I realize that the things that women go through are done so silently, and there's no reason for that. Mm-hmm. It should be discussed openly. We should be talking to our girlfriends about what they're experiencing and what they're going through. And so that, I think, is where the beginning of my journey in functional medicine was really just about overall wellness, trying to figure out, you know, I did a deep dive into gut health, which we, you know, is a topic that is very important, very dear to my heart, because In my own family, I have people that struggle with, you know, gastrointestinal issues. And
I feel like a lot of women especially are so afraid to talk about that topic because it's not so glam.
It's
you
not
know?
Glamorous. It's not. It's yeah. And they deal with it in silence. So yeah. much of what we deal with as people, I mean, men don't talk about their issues either,
right?
Women at least will open up a little bit more to people they trust.
Yeah.
But I think if you take away any stigmas or any, you know, judgment out of it, you get to a point where all we want is to regain health as best as we can.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And like you said, they suffer in silence. And so many people that patients that you have for functional medicine, they have been suffering for a long time and they don't know who to go to, and they feel like they can't talk to anybody other than a doctor like you that understands and talks and helps them through it. So,
and a lot of them get to me after years of frustration dealing with, you know, their doctors who are trying to do the best for them. At the end of the day, no doctor, I mean, I hear all kinds of these conspiracy theories and things about doctors. No doctor I know has gone into this field for any other reason but to help people. And that's what they want to do. But the way that medicine is set up, you have these 15-minute visits.
Mm-hmm.
How much can you accomplish in those short visits with your doctor, right? So a functional medicine visit, the first intake is an hour and a half usually, right? And the reason for that is that we've already gathered information from those patients ahead of time so I can read through their history. But then I can really narrow down the focus to what's important and ask those deeper questions that they'll never be asked that in a regular 15-minute visit because no one has that time.
No.
And so, you know, we try to get a sense of their family history, of their background growing up. A lot of their physical health concerns have a relationship to their emotional and mental health concerns.
Mm-hmm.
You can't separate that. It's not like, oh, go see your psychiatrist or your therapist to talk about your emotions. Let's talk only about your health concern. They're all interrelated. We are interrelated as human beings, and there's no way to separate that. When we try to separate that is when we get into a situation where we can help them partially but not completely.
Mental affects the physical just as much,
absolutely.
I would assume. Yeah,
absolutely.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions about functional medicine that you think people have?
I think one of the big ones is that it's a pill mill where it's, you know, you go to see this doctor, and instead of giving you prescription medications, they're giving you 1,000 supplements or 100 supplements. You know, just a large amount that are that I think. And the longer that I'm doing functional medicine, the longer that I'm in this field, the more I'm recognizing that supplements are an addition, but they do not replace your lifestyle and the way that you live your life and the things you do for your health. And so, the longer that I'm in it, the less I think supplements are the answer. Long-term. Yes, they are very helpful for short-term and for targeted approaches. You know, people talk about taking a multivitamin. Well, that's not a bad idea as long as you're getting a multivitamin from a really good source. But wouldn't it be better to know what you actually need and what you're needing to replace in your body?
Rather than just taking everything.
Exactly.
That you may not need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as a patient, as a person myself on the other side of this, I also don't want to be, you know, taking 20, 30 pills a day. I want to take what I need and then beyond that have a lifestyle that actually makes me healthier every day. And that's what I think is one of the misconceptions is that, you know, people think, oh, they're just going to put me on, you know, so many pills and I'm going to feel sick from that or it's not going to really address my underlying issues. I think also functional medicine gets a bad rap because there are people practicing functional medicine that really don't understand the background and how to put everything together for a patient, which is difficult. Even I struggle with that sometimes. It's not the easiest. You get complex patients sometimes that have already been to so many doctors, they're on so many medications. You're trying to balance all that. You're trying to not mess up something at the same time that you're trying to help them, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's there's those nuances that are that the longer someone's in practicing functional medicine, the better they get at it, because you realize, and there are, the thing about any human being is that there are certain things that apply to most human beings, and then there are certain things that are very individual. So if you can really get a good grasp of the things that make us all healthy, right, that keep us healthy, and you focus more on those things. So as an example, gut health, we touched on it briefly. But when I first evaluate a new patient, I'm really focused on their GI system and their gut health because, you know, that the gut-brain connection, the gut-immune connection, the gut-everything connection in the body is so important that you realize if you start with the gut, in somebody, you're going to help them significantly by just focusing on that. Then you can move on to other things like their, you know, thyroid health, their adrenal health, their hormone health. All those things are interrelated, but if the gut's not healthy, those other things won't help them.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest challenges that you see some of your patients face?
I think the biggest thing is for them to be completely committed to following a program, because what happens is a lot of times they want the help, but then they also have a very busy lifestyle. They have children, they have jobs, they have, you know, spouses, they have families, they have responsibilities, and they may have aging parents they're taking care of. I mean, that's something I'm struggling mm-hmm. with right now. These things take up a lot of your time, and if you don't have the mindset that says, let me put myself first and take care, because if, like they say on an airplane, you know, make sure that you have the air supply to yourself, and then you take care of everybody around you. Well, it's the same thing in life, that we have to make sure we take care of ourselves so we're there for everybody else to take care of them. And a lot of times people will still put themselves at the end of that list.
Yeah. And then you're burning, what is that called, at both ends. And you
You're burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, that's the expression. How does your approach to weight management, you think, different from traditional methods or other methods that might be out there right now?
So the first thing about my approach, which I think a lot of people don't recognize as a bias sometimes, is that I never think it's the patient's fault for wherever their weight is right now. Because I know, I've seen in my own family, I have, you know, relatives that I love dearly that have a weight problem, and I know that they didn't do anything to cause that. It's, if we take away the stigma of weight being the person's individual responsibility or problem, and we recognize we are in a epidemic of overweight people, and when you have an epidemic of something, we don't blame people when COVID came and we're like, oh, you got COVID, it's your fault. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It is in the same way, when we have an epidemic of obesity, we have to look at our environment, we have to look at our food, mm-hmm. We have to look at everything around us to recognize that we got to this point because of multiple factors that go into it. And if we can take that stigma out of it and really recognize that, okay, this person that is here for me to help, I can look at all the different aspects of their health and what they've done and help guide them in a way that is not judgmental at all. So I think that's number one. Mm-hmm. The other thing is to recognize that one size does not fit all for anything in functional medicine, anything in life, and definitely anything with weight loss. So mm-hmm. you have to really, you know, you work with certain parameters that make it safe for their weight loss journey, but then you have to adjust those to that individual person. I think that's where the success we have in our practice is, because we're using modern medicine combined with some really good functional medicine approaches. And those, so what I find in my patient population is they lose weight safely mm-hmm. and slowly, mm-hmm. because if you lose weight fast, what you're losing is muscle, and muscle is health span and longevity. At the end of the day, if you can maintain as much muscle mass as you can as you're getting into your later years, you will age better. That's true for everybody.
I remember that's the one thing that always stuck in my head going through that process with you, was that you kept pushing it into my brain, your muscle. You have to make sure that you're getting your protein, because that's one thing I never wanted to lose, because as you get older, you said that's the one thing that you have,
yes.
are your bones. And a lot of the women that you see that are frail or you know, that's a result of them not having done the things
Absolutely.
That you suggest, you know. So can you share a success story or a patient experience that you've had with someone within functional medicine and weight management that stuck with you and that you want to share?
Yeah, so many great stories. I think let's go back to functional medicine for a minute, because that's sort of the umbrella for everything
yeah.
that I do, and the weight loss is one component, the hormones are one component, the GI stuff is one component. But at the end of the day, I think the best success stories have a very common theme in them, and that is, first of all, I need somebody to come see me who is 100% committed and trusts that I'm going to do my best for them, because it's a partnership at the end of the day. So the best success stories, I'll give you an example. I had a young woman, mid-20s, who has been suffering with acne all her life. You know, it's just something that's been a problem for since she can remember, 12 years old, you know, starting to develop it, has been to many doctors. He's been to her dermatologist, her primary care doctor, the pediatrician initially when she was younger. And I think she was getting medication. It was recommended she go on Accutane. She didn't do well with that. So now she comes and finds me at this, you know, mid-20s age where I think that's actually an age where people are ready to take control of their own health. Mm-hmm. And if you get somebody younger, a lot of times it's their mother usually bringing them in. They may not be 100% committed, but when I see somebody that comes to see me on their own, they're in their mid-20s, let's say.
They're serious.
They're serious about their health, and they're frustrated. They want to get to the bottom of this, and they want to know, why can't I be healthy and have clear skin that all my friends have, right? Yeah. Why am I dealing with this issue? Well, a lot of times those people don't understand that it goes back to gut health. So if we can make your gut health strong, and your 70% of our immune function lives in the gut. So if you think about that statistic, the fact that most of your immune function is in the gut, that's why I care about your gut health, because I'm also caring about your immune health, even though we may not have that conversation. That's what I'm thinking in the back of my mind, right? So this patient comes in to see me, and we did a stool test to see how she's doing. We did a hormone test. We did some blood work, and the results came back. And then at the second visit, when we're going over everything, and I'm talking to her about her gut health, I know I saw, you know, there was this look of puzzlement on her face, even though we had talked about it the first visit, how important gut health is. But when I went through her results and I showed her why a lot of her, the imbalances in her bacteria, for instance, in the gut, the fact that there was fungal overgrowth in her gut, in her stool test, wow. These were the things that people don't recognize as contributing to things like acne, because our skin is really... it mirrors our insides.
From the inside out.
Absolutely. Yeah. If our insides are healthy, our skin is going to be healthy.
Right.
If our insides are unhealthy, it will reflect in our skin or in, you know, various ways that you can actually physically see, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even things like toenail fungus, to give an example, that's an indicator.
That can come from a gut?
That
issue?
Absolutely is related to the gut. So when people try to do topical treatments or... medications that only address that, and they're not looking at the gut health, they're missing a whole big component, because that person's never going to actually get balanced in their health
mm-hmm.
until you can work on their gut health. So she had this fungal overgrowth in her stool sample, and I talked to her about her diet, because, you know, too much carbohydrates in your diet can cause fungal overgrowth and bacteria that don't belong there, or that can lead to dysbiosis, which is basically an imbalance in the gut flora that can cause infection in the GI system, right? So that's what dysbiosis is.
Mm-hmm.
And she had all of that. So in her mind, she's thinking, I don't know why this doctor is so, you know, and I can see it on her face too, the disbelief that has
any relationship.
However, she's been to so many doctors already, so maybe give this a chance, you know?
Right.
So sometimes you have to convince people that, listen, give me a chance for 6 weeks to see, follow my instructions, my recommendations, and if you're going to follow them wholeheartedly, I know I can
right.
get you better.
And I feel like a lot of people for acne would typically go to a dermatologist, right?
Yes.
But a dermatologist, while they're good at helping with certain things, like, do you feel like dermatologists typically would send to a functional medicine doctor to see what is the root cause, or would they even have the understanding?
I don't think they have that understanding. The ones that I've any doctor that has an open mind towards other modalities, so I'm not even talking about functional medicine here, just take a step back from that. If you're, as a physician, if you have an open mind to other modalities, you know, even things like acupuncture or like Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, functional medicine, all of these things are other types of approaches that a doctor that has an open mind to any of them is going to be a better doctor, because
mm-hmm.
if you close your mind, if I close my mind off to certain aspects of medicine or anything, I've really taken away that toolbox, that toolkit, from somebody that could have helped them, right?
Yeah.
So in that way, I don't close my mind to anything. If someone comes to me, a patient comes to me, and I'm always learning from my... That's the other thing, is to always be learning from your patients, from your peers, from anybody that you speak to. And when someone tells me something, I'm like, oh my God, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about that?
Do you
that?
Find like you're surprised by some of the things that you're still finding out about people, or what they're coming to you about? Like, or do you find yourself...
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day I learn something new. And if I think... when people ask what aging is, you know, what is aging?
Mm-hmm.
Aging physically looks like something, but aging mentally is a hardening of your mind to not learn new things, okay? So I think that from a very young age, I would see, you know, even my mom sometimes would be like, oh, I'm so old. And she was in her mid-30s, and I thought that was really old back then.
Right, no. Only now.
In my mid-50s, I'm like, oh, my God, 30s? So you're so young. You're so innocent. You don't even know what life is yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that anybody that keeps that open mind is letting the potential of new information into their brain. So this patient, for instance, kept her mind open enough to say, all right, I'm going to trust this doctor to at least give her some time to help me with what I want to work on, what I want to achieve, even though she's talking about my gut health. I don't care. My gut health is great. I don't think my gut health is a problem. Well, I'm going over your results now, I'm telling her. And you have all these issues just in your GI system. We haven't even gotten to your hormones yet, which also have issues, but we can't address your hormones until we really work on your gut health. Right. Your blood work shows some issues too. We can talk about that as well. So the second visit assessment, when we go over all those results, I talk about all those findings. But what I tell my patients is we are not going to address everything from the get-go, because guess what? I'm going to be overwhelmed and so are you. Right. This is too much information, right? The reason we get the information in the beginning is because I have to use this information, you know, down the line. I'll come back to your hormones. I'll come back to your blood work. But let's focus on your gut health this first visit and what we're going to do about it. So we went through the program. You know, we did an elimination diet where we cut out things like gluten and dairy and eggs and soy and wheat. Well, gluten and wheat are the same thing, sorry. But so basically you're cutting out things like gluten and dairy and eggs and sugar.
Typically, I was going to ask you, is it typically anything that could be an allergen?
That it could be an allergen, but more so it's things that cause food sensitivity. Okay. If someone has an allergy to a certain food, you have to cut that out. That's something you cannot be eating unless you've somehow gone through a program of immunization to that, right? Mm-hmm. That's different. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at food sensitivities, they can cause a lot of health issues, and they're not readily recognized by the medical community as creating problems. But I'll give you one example. People that have Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is a very common autoimmune condition that affects the thyroid gland, and if they cut out gluten, does that help everybody? No, but the vast majority of people that cut out gluten who have Hashimoto's will slow down their progression of their disease. That happens to a lot of people, more than 70% of them. And there are studies coming out about that. It's in the normal medical journals. It's not even in these, you know, these integrative or functional journals. We're talking about actual medical journals that show that cutting out gluten can help people with Hashimoto's in a significant percentage.
Other things, right?
Yeah. Yes, and with a lot of other things too. But there's that association between gluten and Hashimoto's particularly. And those people do better. Well, why don't we tell all people that have Hashimoto's that? We should be telling everybody that. Mm-hmm. So at least give it a try. It may not help everybody, but it helps a lot of people.
It's the vast majority. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's just one example of where, you know, food can have a real impact on somebody's health. So when I'm talking to this young woman and I'm telling her that, you know, we're going to go through this elimination diet, I want you to do this 28-day elimination diet, and it's kind of a reset to your GI system. It's a reset for your immune function in the gut, because your immune system is not completely, you know, activated constantly against these foods that may be giving you sensitivities. And on top of that, we did a bunch of, I had a bunch of recommendations for her about the fungal overgrowth, about the bacteria that was, you know, the dysbiosis that was present in her system. And I saw her back at 8 weeks after she'd done this program for 6 weeks, and she was already feeling so much different. She didn't realize that her gut actually had issues, but once you removed a lot of those things and you've given, you know, the repair types of supplements that I do, and so I do use supplements. You know, I mentioned earlier that I don't want to throw a million supplements at you, but there are some guided, targeted supplements that really make a difference in that individual person, mm-hmm. and that's what we did with her. Mm-hmm. So she came back. Her skin was a little bit clearer, but that wasn't the main thing. It was that she was feeling better. Right. So skin takes a long time, right? That even just the skin cycle of, you know, the dead skin cells and the maturation of your skin to be on the surface takes time. And so that may not be enough time for her to have seen significant results, but she was feeling better. So now she trusted me. She felt like, I went to this doctor and I felt she different for answers. The first time in yeah. my life. Right. Yeah. Something, yeah. even answers she didn't even ask questions to, right?
Yeah.
This was not even, she didn't care about her gut health, but now she knows she's feeling better. And therefore, now she's going to trust me with the rest of the journey. And that's exactly what happened. We worked together. It took about
and
6 months.
The trust in you. That's the main part.
That's the main part. Yeah. To build that trust, to be able to say, okay, I understand that I may not know what you're talking about, but I trust you because you've already made me feel better. And that's where functional medicine, I think, really shines, because nothing happens in one visit. Nothing happens in 6 weeks even. It's a process. But they get better over time.
Right.
And, you know, I saw her back. She came for a follow-up visit for another reason. And her skin was clear. And she's feeling great about herself.
Mm-hmm.
And now she knows that functional medicine is there available to her when she needs something for any issues that come up in her future life. But she doesn't need to see me forever. Mm-hmm. My goal as a functional medicine doctor is not to have a patient for life.
Right.
I want a patient that comes to see me. We address their issues and they go on and they live their life. And they'll come back and see me if they need to. Or in her case, she was just happy to come and say, you know what, thank you so much for what you did for me.
Yeah, you gave her the tools.
Yes.
And then they have to use that, and, you know, if they need you, you're there.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
Yeah.
What is that one piece of information or advice that you would give somebody to help transform their overall health? Or, like, one thing that you wish people knew, you know, to help them, and whether it be, like you said, like, and the one quote that you always live by is, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And for me, I live by that now too. Like, I've cut things out of my diet.
Yes.
But
we've gone to dinner together, so I know.
No, I know. I've cut a lot of things out. But what is that one thing that you wish people knew that can really help transform? Like, just like a little thing that can help transform.
I have two. It's very hard to have just one, but a food you mentioned already, and food is our energy, but it's also our medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know that if we eat healthy, whole foods, if we obviously avoid the things that we're allergic to or sensitive to, but then beyond that, you know, avoid all those processed foods. We all know that they're bad for us.
Yeah.
And eating, you know, good sources of protein, good clean sources of protein, which gets harder and harder in our environment to find, but we can still find them. And you know, I know budgets and money is always going to be a factor, but if you can find the best, cleanest sources of your food, that is going to be the number one thing, because that is
mm-hmm.
our energy source, that's our medicine.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is going to be sleep, because young people don't understand the importance of sleep. As we get older, we protect our sleep
now
much more and more.
Yeah.
And you recognize that that's when we heal. So if your food is your medicine during the day, sleep is your medicine at night because that is what's healing you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're getting your, you know, 7 to 8 hours of good quality sleep, protected sleep, where you know that you are not, you know, your devices are put away, your phone is not near you, you're not watching television late into the night, you're not texting or on, you know, Instagram or whatever,
right.
whatever you're doing, you know, scrolling through, that is the time that your body heals. You know, we're producing lots of good hormones when we sleep. And those two things, food that's healthy, that's whole foods, as well as protecting your sleep, are going to be the two things that you can change without even needing to see anybody, that you can focus on yourself at
yeah.
home. And if you can start doing that, you're already on your journey to better health.
That makes sense. So aside from all of that, and we'll get deeper into different episodes when it comes to specific topics. So let's, for people to get to know you a little bit more, the wrap up. So what is a day, like a typical day, look like for you?
So on a non-work day,
mm-hmm.
for instance, I get up at 7 a.m. and I have some routines that I do, some hot water that I drink in the morning, just because I think that kind of gets my metabolism going. I'll put some lemon in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get up right away and I start doing my stretches. That's like my first thing in the morning that I do. So I like to do my yoga stretches just right in my bedroom. I have a yoga mat that's already laid out there. And then I get ready for the day. Usually that involves, and I don't eat anything until noon. So, you know, we'll talk, I'm sure, in a future episode about intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm.
Intermittent fasting is not for everybody, but for those in whom it works well, it works really well.
Yeah.
And so it helps me keep my weight at a
mm-hmm.
you know, stable, steady level. And so I don't eat before noon, but I do drink a lot of fluid. So I'll have my lemon water in the morning, my one cup of coffee, because I don't do more than that now anymore. And then the rest of the day for me is green tea. So I'm drinking green tea throughout the day. Very dilute, though, because it does have caffeine in it.
Yeah.
And for some people who are sensitive, that can be an issue, even the small amount of caffeine. So I'll use, like, the equivalent of one tea bag and a whole pitcher full of hot water to get my my tea steeped in there. And drink that
throughout the
day.
What are the benefits of green tea?
Green tea has so many health benefits to it. I mean, we should spend actually a whole episode talking about it. But it helps your metabolism.
Okay.
It it gives you, so unlike coffee, which gives you that quick energy boost, green tea does it slower and more steady. And so it helps your metabolism. It has
probably better for anxiety too, right?
Yes.
Caffeine tends to give
caffeine can
anxiety.
Give some people anxiety. Yeah. So even green tea can in some people that are sensitive, but for the majority of us, you know, it has ECGC in it, which is a component of it that's very healthy. It's got great antioxidants in it. One thing that I do believe about supplements is I'm not a fan of taking the supplement out of the green tea and taking that. I'd rather you take the whole food, which is the green tea, because it's got hundreds of other nutrients in it that we haven't even studied yet.
Yeah.
But we know that it's beneficial. It's great for your liver. It's great for you know, people talk about detoxing and all these other things. We do daily detox with having a normal bowel movement every day. That's going to be like, I could spend an entire day
talking about how
constipation is a 911 emergency in functional medicine. I tell my patients that and they laugh at me because they think it's really funny that I consider that an emergency. But at the end of the day, if you're not, having a normal bowel movement, at least one every single day where you feel cleaned out, you're not detoxing.
Right.
So people can talk about fancy detox programs and all these other things. No, have a normal bowel movement every day. Make sure you're peeing a lot, that your pee is clear. You know, these are all things that I feel like are so important but maybe don't get enough press because
they're not
fancy and they're not sexy, right?
No, it's not a sexy conversation to have. But it's a daily life thing.
It's something, and those are the daily things in life that sometimes we get derailed because if someone has constipation, remember, those toxins are staying in your system. Some of those things can recirculate with the way that our GI system and our liver and our gut is set up. It's made to sometimes recirculate things. And so if you are getting rid of your waste every single day, it has no chance to cause any damage. Mm-hmm. Colon cancer is much higher in people with constipation. Like that's a big problem. And so do we talk about that? Do we learn as young people that you have to have a normal bowel movement every day, preferably, you know, young people go after every meal. That's a normal thing to have a meal and go to the bathroom because that's the
my son in the middle
the
of
the gastrocolic reflex. That's the reflex we have. Yeah. We lose that as we get older.
I wish
right?
I had that metabolism.
So and people that still have it, I mean, I'm jealous of them. I could tell you, I'm not jealous of the supermodel that you know is a size two, but someone who has three bowel movements that are normal a day. Yes,
A good gut system going on.
Absolutely. That is like, that to me is like, you know, that's somebody that is either lucky or their lifestyle is such that they are really in a great system in terms of cleansing daily.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's something I focus on a lot. If there's any issues with bowel movement, mm-hmm. potential at that age. So you're not comparing yourself to a 50-year-old or a 40-year-old or even a 60-year-old. You want to be the best at your age. And so I am all about longevity and health span. And, and so when that article came out, I had already started playing pickleball at that point, but I was like, oh, now I'm definitely
now you're
playing.
In. Now
I'm,
you're
I'm
in.
100% committed to this sport because the one thing that people lose as they get older is lateral movement. Mm-hmm. That side-to-side movement that you do with racket sports, pickleball, tennis, you know, racquetball, all these sports is something we lose as we get older, and that's what helps our balance. So, you know, older people, a lot of times, they're at a fall risk, right?
Yeah.
My parents have both fallen multiple times, and it's very scary because, you know, you break a hip, you can end up in the hospital, and then the risk of dying from complications related to that is very high in those people, right?
Yeah.
So my goal as in playing pickleball now is to have that lateral movement, have the mental engagement that gives me.
Right.
And you know,
so this is giving you so much more than just going out there to be
absolutely.
Like physical activity. It's mental. It's kind of like your overall well-being, which is really cool. I didn't even know that about
And that's the thing, that the more I delve into these things, that one article that came out, the fact that, you know, racket sports are the number one, because they tested everything. They looked at swimming. They looked at oh my gosh, you know, going on a treadmill, walking, all of those things. Walking is amazing. I mean, I'm not telling people not to go for walks every day because that's one of the best things you can do for yourself. However, if you add a racket sport, you are adding different things than you would ever get with any other sport.
And that's a full body. That's a full body sport.
It's a full body workout.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely.
Cool.
And it's, you know, yes, there are injuries that happen more because people are older when they're starting these sports. I have to be careful of that. You know, tennis elbow falls. There's all kinds of things, you know. That, but overall, it's still one of the best sports out there for longevity.
I really want to get into it.
Yes. And, you know, the number of young people, I was taking a lesson on Saturday, and there were kids that were under, they looked like they were all under 18, like multiple kids playing pickleball. And I was so happy to see that. That made me really happy.
And there, it's probably until no time that I'll be into the schools, because I don't think they're in the schools yet.
My actually, one of my my nephew told me that pickleball was an option when he was in school.
Really?
So I think they'd added
it.
So, yeah, not all school systems, I'm sure. But I'm hoping that by even hearing this, the fact that it's, you know, it increases longevity, that's something we should be starting much younger.
Yeah, absolutely. So, aside from pickleball and all that, so what does the end of your day look like? Do you cook? Do you like to cook?
I love to cook. I don't always get enough time. You know, the problem with having a really big social circle is that we go out a lot. But I do love to cook. And I think, you know, you and I, we've gone out to dinner. We know that we choose the healthiest things on the menu. And try to stay away from, you know, too many simple carbs and all those things. All the healthy things that we already know to do. I try to incorporate that, and then so I cook at least 3 to 4 times a week. That's a priority
that's
for me because my husband appreciates it a lot.
Yeah.
Even with the kids being out of the house, it's something that, you know, I used to do every day before, and now of course it's dropped off a little bit because we do have social things to do. But I love to cook, and I really try to choose recipes. You know, protein has to be your main priority in that. But equally important on that plate is going to be my vegetables. And you don't want it, you know, your vegetables to be mainly starches. You want greens as much as you can include in there, and whatever vegetables you like, change it up, you know, because at the end of the day, high fiber, so cruciferous vegetables, you know, the cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, all of those add things that they're breast cancer preventive. Mm-hmm. Like these are things
and
that
a lot
you know,
of people don't know this stuff.
Women need to know that. One thing I will say that I want to tell everybody: holiday season is coming up. I want to make sure that I tell everybody, more than three drinks a week in a woman increases your risk of breast cancer. So if I can just get one message out there during this holiday season is to please watch your alcohol intake. Nobody realizes alcohol. I love my cocktails also, but I limit the amount I have based on that statistic.
Yeah.
That statistic is scary.
That's very scary.
And it's something that most of us have. You know,
because when you
easily
think about it, you said three a week, right?
Yes.
So when you think about it, people, especially younger girls who go out socially, three drinks could be
in one night.
Right.
More than that in one night.
Right.
So I think if, you know, and I know that maybe the younger ones aren't going to listen to this as much, but I'm hoping I'm getting the women that are actually really caring about their health at this point to understand that that is a major risk factor. And you could do everything else really healthy. You could be eating healthy, exercising, sleeping well. But if alcohol is a big part of your week, you know, cutting back on that is, you know, one thing I've noticed is most restaurants now have amazing mocktails on the menu because people are recognizing that more and more people don't want to be drinking alcohol all the time.
Right.
So I will have one cocktail now and then switch over to my seltzer and, you know, lime. Like that's what I'll do now.
Right.
So I put that into my own lifestyle. I make sure that I do that because
and
it's
you
important.
Feel better.
You do feel better.
Like,
you do feel better.
You know, I can't do like I used to do when I was younger either. And now the older I get, the more I want to be up and awake at early in the morning to do Pilates or to work out. Like,
right, because the next day you don't feel good after you've had too many drinks.
No.
So.
Yeah. So. So well. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was fun.
This was so much fun.
This was fun. And then, so going forward, we're going to be, you know, talking about different topics that Dr. Mont specializes in. Like she said, we're going to go and dive into intermittent fasting and metabolic health, how to balance your hormones, foods that heal the gut versus foods that harm it, supplements, the role of your mindset, weight loss management, and so forth. But thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We are very excited for this new venture of ours and
thank
to see
you.
Where it takes
so
us.
So exciting.
Yeah.
It's great.
So happy Thanksgiving, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
Happy Thanksgiving.